Larry Boa, April 23rd, 2016.
What has the game meant to you? You've been in it a long time. What has it meant to your life?
Well, it's been my whole life, really. I was around it since I was able to walk. My dad was a minor league player, managed in AAA, so there was a bat and ball in the house. And then obviously being able to play in the big leagues and move through the Philly system in a pretty fast manner. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something that you don't take it for granted. You respect the game. I've always respected the game. You try to stay humble in this game. You can't get too high. You can't get too down. You have to be, on the East Coast anyway, you better be mentally tough to handle all the adversity and the expectations that people put on you. You know, on the East Coast, it's a live and die sport. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was always taught just play the game hard. No matter what the score is, no matter what you're doing personally, if you're 0 for 4, 4 for 4, play each game like it might be your last game. That's how I basically approached it ever since I put on the uniform.
When did you first think about playing professionally?
To be honest with you, I wanted to play professionally, but, you know, I was small, so I knew the odds were probably against me. But I used to watch games on TV. I remember staying home watching, my mom let me stay home and watch the World Series in 56 mm-hmm. with Larson. We kept score together, my mom and me, when he threw the perfect game. So, I mean, watching, when I was growing up, the Yankees were on every Saturday, so.
Right.
That was my favorite team because they were on TV. So, you know, watching them play, I mean, and then watching guys like Nelly Fox and Louis Aparicio, small guys, you know, you felt, hey, these guys aren't real big. Maybe something could happen here.
What about Rizzuto?
I love watching those guys, all the little guys. I just, my dad always told me you don't have to be big to play this game. In stature, you know, you got to be able to be a smart player. And when I was growing up, it was when you played in the middle, you catch everything. If whatever you hit's a bonus. You know, obviously the game has changed in that aspect. But moving runners, stealing bases, making routine plays. You know, my dad taught me fundamentals since I was in Little League. So that's why it bothers me sometimes when you watch games that as basic as a bunny is, guys can't do it. You know, it doesn't really show you the real meaning of the game, because to me, you got to be able to do everything. And guys just, and it's not their fault too. I mean, obviously the people that own these teams pay guys on home runs and RBIs, and fundamentals are sort of thrown under the rug.
It always amazes me when I watch a rundown. Can you really see it done properly?
Oh, you always see five throws.
Yeah, it should be two at the most.
That's why I like watching Kansas City. You know, they're fundamentally a sound team. I like watching the Giants. They're fundamentally a sound team. They put the ball in play. They don't have six guys to strike out 140 times. But, you know, when you have the sabermetric people say, what's the big deal of strikeouts? There's a lot about strikeouts. That means you're not putting it in play. That means nothing bad can happen. Put it in play, a guy's throwing it away, take a bad hop, you get a base hit. It's a stupid statement to make, and the people that make those statements to me, they have no knowledge of the game of baseball.
What would you say is the toughest part of life in the majors, either as a player, a coach, manager?
I'd say the daily grind of playing every day. You know, I mean, you're going into different time zones, and if you're a regular, everyday player, I mean, I used to pride myself on playing a lot. I played a lot of games. I knock on wood, I didn't get hurt that much, you know. I took a lot of pride in just going out there. But I think the grind of an everyday, and again, that starts with mental toughness. You got to be able, when you're working out in the winter, you're working out to play every day, not 4 days a week or 5 days. You're working out to play 150 plus games. You know, you're going to get your days off, but for the most part, you know, your mindset is I'm going to play every day.
What motivates you to stay in the game after all?
I like teaching. I like trying to help out, even though some guys, you know, they're set in their ways and the barrier's up, that they're in the big leagues and they don't need any help. So what I try to do is I never force anything on them. I suggest things. If they want to do it, fine. If they don't, you know, that's up to them. I don't ever say, this is the way I did it, I want you to do it that way. Everybody's different. I learned that, though, the hard way. You know, I thought everyone should have my work ethic. I tell these guys, even in spring training, I guarantee every one of you guys have more ability than me. But I don't know if you have the drive or the desire. And, you know, it's more than just ability. There's a lot more involved in it.
So. Well, the ability difference can't be that great when you get to this arena.
No, it's not.
But it's up here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's up there. It's being able to deal with 0-15s, 0-16s. It's being able to deal with making an error in the eighth inning and losing the game. You got to be able to turn the page. I always wanted every ball hit to me. I don't care if I made an error or didn't make an error. I wanted every ball hit to me. But again, my work ethic was different. I took 50 to 60 ground balls every day. Didn't matter. I mean, now you say, oh, don't take too many ground balls, you get tired. I just shake my head when I hear stuff like that.
Where do you think that work ethic came from?
My dad, no question. Not only did he have a great work ethic when he played, but as a dad, he had 2 and 3 jobs he had to do. You know, we didn't come from a lot of money.
My dad, yeah.
So I'd see him get up at 5 in the morning and come home at 8 at night, you know, every day. And yet on the weekends, he always had time for me to go to the park and play. He never, ever said, let's go, you know, if I wanted to go hit or take ground balls, if I said, Dad, let's go, he was right there, so.
Do you think that had anything to do with the Italian heritage of your
dad? Oh, I'm sure. Italians are known for working hard and taking care of their families and, you know, just being there for their families, and you know, that was my dad.
I know your mom wasn't of Italian.
No, she was Slavic. She was another tough person. The Slavonians were, she played softball, and I got a lot of mental toughness from her, too.
So as a kid, did you have a sense of your Italian heritage? Was that a part of you?
Yeah, because my great-grandmother and my grandmother, they spoke a lot of Italian.
Really?
I mean, I couldn't tell you Italian, but yeah. My grandmother and my great-grandmother, they lived a long life, and they spoke Italian. And again, they raised a lot of kids, and they worked hard. And I think the Italian generation, they never took anything for granted. You know, you have to work and earn your way.
Yeah.
No one was going to give you anything. And I, to this day, I respect that. That's why when I see these guys come up and they want entitlement right away, I just shake my head and say, yeah, this is unbelievable. But it's a different generation now. And in order to stay in the game as a coach now, whether I managed or coach, you got to be able to make the adjustment, or because there's things that happen now that if you wanted, it could bug you every day. And I just say to myself, it's just different.
Right.
You know, it's a different generation now.
So it was your great-grandparents that came from Italy?
Yes.
Well, your grandfather, great-grandfather and
right,
grandmother.
Right.
You didn't remember where they're from exactly.
No, you know, that's something to this day that I want to do, and I've never gone to Italy, and I want to go to Italy.
You should, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of tradition there from our family, and that's something I hopefully that will come about.
Say something more about how the game has changed since you started.
Well, obviously the rules are different. The slide rule at home, the slide rule at second.
I have a sense you're not thrilled with the new slide rule.
Neither one of them. The game's the game. If a catcher wants to block the plate, let him block the plate. If he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
If it's second base, I'm not in for dirty play. But I was always taught break up a double play if it means scoring a run.
Mm-hmm.
In a clean manner.
Yeah.
And, you know, to this day, I'll say the same thing about Chase Utley. What he did, it was a late slide. It wasn't a dirty, it was a late slide. And I don't advocate late slides. But as any middle infielder, once the shortstop turns his back, he's got to know that's not a double play. So get the out and get out of the way. So, I mean, things like that. Warnings on breaking balls. If a guy hits you with a breaking ball, okay, that's a warning. I mean, come on.
What about instant replay?
You know, I guess that's a sign of the times because, the more I analyze that, with the extra wild card, teams win getting a wild card by one game. If it means getting the call right, you know, I'm willing to make that. You know, hey, let's get it right. It doesn't matter. I do think that it puts more pressure on umpires. I think the umpires, when we play, an umpire establishes a strike zone in the first inning, and you made the adjustment. That's how it should be. Every umpire is different. But now they're getting graded on if the ball's in the box. And to me, it's a lot of pressure on an umpire. And these instant replays, I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't get any of them right if I was an umpire. I mean, you wonder how'd he come make that call? Because they're right a lot of the times. But then on the other hand, we've had some calls already in 20 games, 17 games in, where the calls got overturned. So if you get it right, I guess that's the bottom line. But it's definitely different.
As you look back, are there certain memories that stand out in your mind?
A World Series. Well, that to me is ultimate for me, winning a World Series. That's your goal. We got in the playoffs a lot of years in a row and came up short because we played the Big Red Machine or the Dodgers. But we had good teams. And then to finally to get over the hump and to see the parade and all the people that came out is something that stays with you forever. So that was something that, all the individual stuff, all-star games, I played in five of them. I won gold gloves. I hit 300. I can honestly tell you that sitting here, I know a lot of my buddies that played saying, God, I wish I'd have done that when I played. I did everything I wanted to do. I played as hard as I could. I got the most out of my ability. And so I sit back and watch, and no one thought I'd get 1,000 hits, let alone get 2,000 hits, because I was an out. I'll be honest with you. When I came up, I was an out. But I worked at it. I persevered. I had a hitting coach, Billy DeMars, who probably worked with me more than anybody ever, and we learned how to hit. So I just put in a lot of hard hours, a lot of long hours, not just during the season, during the wintertime. I didn't take any days off. I might have taken 2 weeks after the season's over just to unwind, but I'd be right back at it again. And I approached spring training every year, even making the All-Stars five times. Like, I had to win a job. That was my mentality. I got to win a job no matter what I did last year. People are waiting to take my job. So that's how I approached it. I'm sure a lot of guys don't feel that way. And I think it made me a better person playing the game that way.
Look back on your career. You said five All-Stars, two Gold Gloves, World Series, Manager of the Year. Do you look back and do you think maybe your career has been undervalued or underestimated?
I don't worry about that, but, when people bring it up to me, they tell me to look at Phil Rizzuto's numbers or Aparicio's numbers, and, they're in the Hall of Fame. I don't look at it that way. I mean, just to be considered, like people saying, man, he was pretty good, that's all I really care about. I mean, it'd be great to do that, but that was the farthest thing from my mind, even being talked about when I was coming up. I just wanted to play in the big leagues. So, I'm just happy the way everything unfolded for me.
When we spoke the other time, you mentioned how important Frank Lucchese was to you. He gave you the chance to play.
Yes, he did.
So, if you look back, were there other managers?
Bob Wellman, my very first manager. My very first game, I struck out like four times. This kid from Sacramento, and I remember sitting in my locker, and he says, "You all right?" And I said, "Man, if baseball's like this, you guys might as well send me home." And he said, "Well, this guy's going to be something special." And it was Nolan Ryan. So, and I'm playing in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and the lights are about as bright as when you turn on your lamp to read at night. And I didn't switch it then. I was right-handed. Obviously, he had a lot to do with me getting on the other side of it.
That was your first year in the minor, your first game.
Very first game.
Four strikeouts.
Yep, and I never struck out trust me, I mean, when I say never, I never did four strikeouts. So I was still a right-handed hitter. And then when I went to Bob Skinner, another guy that had an integral part of me getting to the big leagues, I literally in 69 made the team as a utility player. And he called me in, he says, we're sort of at a dilemma here. He says, you can make this team right now and be a utility player, or you can go down and learn how to switch hit at AAA. And I said, I don't want to play utility. I said, I'll go down and learn how to switch hit. And so all those years hitting right-handed, I had to go to AAA and learn how to hit left-handed. And again, Frank Lucchese was the manager, so obviously it was very ugly at the beginning. I think I ended up hitting 250 or 60 that year, but when someone tells you to eat with your right hand, now all of a sudden you're 22 years old, and they say, oh, put this in your left hand and do this. It was hard.
You had never tried it?
Never.
Wow.
Never.
I never knew that.
No. So I think that conversation with him had a lot to do with me getting to the big leagues. See, I could have very easily, I mean, I look back on that and I'm saying, what a dope. Why didn't you say I'll play in the big leagues as a utility player? But I rolled the dice and said, I want to play every day.
So, paid off.
Yeah, it did pay off.
What about other managers that over the years you've admired and respected?
I respect the heck out of Joe Torre. I mean, I really, Lou Piniella, Jimmy Leland. Those guys, what they've done in baseball as managers, Tony La Russa, you know, to mold teams like they did, and you know, to have that instant respectability that they get. You look back on that, and Danny Ozark was a great guy for our team because we had a bunch of rebel rousers, and he was quiet, and he let us do our thing. Dallas Green, guy that put his foot up our ass, you know, when we had to. So there's a lot of guys, really.
So when you became a manager, did you learn from just watching it?
Yeah, I did. The only thing, if there was a regret, maybe getting another chance, you know, to manage. I had a couple of interviews. I thought, you know, like this last year was Miami. Basically, I had a bunch of people tell me if Donnie didn't quit the Dodgers, that I had a good shot to manage that team. But, you know, what baseball, to me, if there is a negative in baseball, that you get labeled and people don't think that you change. So, obviously, when I took over, well, in Philly, I took over a team that lost 100 games every year for 4 or 5 years. And then every year I managed it, we were over 500, so I feel a little bit responsible for changing the culture of that clubhouse. Obviously, I wasn't around to reap the benefits, but you know, that's the one area where I think that baseball's, they label people, you know, and people do change, but you know, just the way baseball is.
Did you approach managing as a teacher or as somebody who had to oversee the whole team?
Probably oversee the whole thing. And looking back, I think you have to delegate coaches. I mean, you got enough to worry about with the media and strategy and pitchers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hindsight being 20/20, you like to see them do their thing.
That fine line between being the manager and, you know, having to command the team, the players, and yet not doing it in such a way that you lose them. Is that
that's tough. You know, people know. I mean, Dan Plesac could be the first to tell you, you know, he loved playing for me. And he said, he's shocked that some people say, well, Bo was tough. And he says, it's like these guys that signed up for Indiana basketball. They knew what Bobby Knight was all about. And they still went there. So, that was pretty good correlation, So, but I don't. I'm just that way. I wear my emotions on my sleeve, whether I'm mad or I'm happy. Mm-hmm. I've always done that. So it's not a matter of being a front runner. When I'm mad, I'm mad. And when I'm happy, I'm happy. I don't like losing. I don't care. I used to play my daughter in gin, and as bad as this sounds, when she beat me in gin, I get mad. So, I like winning. I like winning even though, like right now, we're going through a rebuilding cycle. I still don't like it when we lose. And I know when we came into this, I've heard it from the executives, hey, this is going to be tough. You got to battle through it. And I understand that. And I've done that. But I still don't like losing. That's just the way I am. I'll never accept losing. I've learned how to deal with it, but I'll never accept it.
You played with one of the all-time great pitchers, obviously, Steve Carlton. Who were the guys that were toughest for you?
To hit?
Yeah.
At first, everybody. No, there's a lot of Ryan, Bob Gibson, Seaver. They're all Hall of Fame pitchers. But, you know, if that's why some of the times when these kids ask me, did you ever face any good pitchers? Like I said, let me tell you something. If they had the guns they have now, those things would all register 95, 98. Yeah. It's completely different. The only thing different is the mentality of pitchers today. They don't like pitching inside, or they're not taught to. Whereas those guys, they were mean. If you took a hard swing or fell down, the next pitch should be up and in. It's one thing facing a good pitcher that you know is going to be around the plate, but then facing a good pitcher that had a mean streak down his back, it was different. We didn't have all that armor or all that stuff.
Who was worse in that regard, Ryan or Gibson?
I'd have to say Nolan. Nolan had that. They were both, well, obviously, Hall of Fame people, but they had that mean streak in them, man. If you got a hit, you ran down there and just, you didn't gloat, you didn't flip, you didn't do shit. You just got down there and said, thank you for letting me have the ability to get a hit off of him. You didn't stare at him if he threw one up at him. You didn't do that stuff.
All right. So those are the days if a guy in front of you had a home run, you went down.
It didn't matter. If you were a singles hitter, I mean, it didn't matter. That's just the way the game was. And you expected it. That's just the way it was played.
Who do you see today among pitchers that you think are outstanding?
Well, Syndergaard stands out real big in my mind. Four pitches, great velocity. Got a little mean streak in him, it looks like. There's a lot of good pitchers now. I mean, I just think that with the philosophy that these trainers have now, the information they have, the diets they're on, the personal trainers they have, obviously the conditions are better. There's a lot of good pitchers. I mean, you could go on every team and say, Bumgarner, he's Kershaw. I had the ability. I mean, I was very fortunate to coach in L.A. when he first came up and to watch him go through that maturation process. But you can go on every team, and there's some real good talent on the mound.
What about non-pitchers? Who are they? Great all-around ball players or great hitters?
Well, I love watching McCutchen play. I like Bryce Harper, the way he plays the game. Trout. I just like the way that I like the way Rizzo handles himself. Very professional. There's a lot of guys. Votto, good hitter. Again, Posey. There's so many good baseball players now. I just wish that all these players had that they were fundamentally sound. You know, the ones I mentioned are pretty much fundamentally sound, and that's why they're such great players.
What about when you were playing? You stood out. Of course, you had Mike Schmidt on your team.
Schmidt was great. I used to love watching Willie Starker play. I had I was very lucky to play one year. My first year, I got to see Roberto Clemente. That was something special. Johnny Bench, Pete. Those were good. The Dodgers and that infield. There's a lot of good players who played when we played. The competition between me and Davey Concepcion, you know, he was obviously had more power than I did, but it was that friendly competition we had. Bill Russell. A lot of good things happened when we played.
You talk about the Dodgers infield. What about You know, when Steve Sachs went through that time when he couldn't throw,
yeah.
What's that like?
I mean, I never had that, but I mean, I felt sorry for him. It's just a mental thing. Steve Blass had it with the Pirates when he pitched. He was a great pitcher. All of a sudden, he can't throw the ball to the plate. It just, you know, mentally, it's... I mean, John Smoltz, when he first started out, he had to have a professional guy take care of the mentality of how to pitch and everything. I mean, you know, him and Maddox, to watch those guys, when they first came up, struggle. Now in the Hall of Fame,
mm-hmm.
It shows you a lot about their mental toughness and stick-to-itiveness. I really think this game, when you go through adversity, it makes you a better person. And there's not too many guys that can say they didn't go through any adversity when they played baseball.
Talk about a Hall of Fame long shot. What about Mike Piazza?
Another great catcher with tremendous power. Hitting the ball the other way. He probably hits the ball the other way, hit the ball the other way better than anybody I've ever seen. You know, those guys were big and strong. And really, if you think about it, Piazza, when he first came up, I looked at some pictures of him. He was a scrawny dude.
Yeah.
And he made himself into a great player. So you take your hat off to those guys. He never got drafted. You know, he didn't get the opportunity. The Dodgers signed him.
Well, they signed him basically as a favor.
Right,
for
Tommy.
Tommy Lasorda.
Right, and that's why I look back. You know, my first year was the first year of the draft. I didn't even get a smell of the draft. So, you know, to say you never got drafted and played 16 years in the big leagues, that's one of these guys, the number one picks. They say, oh, he can't miss. Well, yeah, you can miss, you know.
How did you get signed?
Eddie Bachman. The scout for the Phillies watched me play junior college because I didn't play high school. I got cut.
Really? Are you serious?
Every year I didn't play high school baseball. They said I was too small. So he came to, I was playing in the summer, and the college coach was Del Bandy, and he says, I'd like you to come out for my team. And I looked at him and I went, I didn't even make my high school team. I'm going to play for you.
Sure.
He said, I'll give you every opportunity to play. So I went there and I played 2 years. I made all conference as a shortstop. Eddie Bachman saw me and he told the Phillies, he says, I got a guy that he can catch the ball, he can run, he can throw. I don't know if he's going to hit, but in the long run, he'd be a good organization guy. You know, he might play double A, triple A if you need a stopgap. So I guess he sent some video of me to Paul Owens. They were at the winter meetings and they put a big sheet on the wall and they ran this video. And Paul Owens says, man, this guy looks pretty fast. He says, I don't know if he's going to hit, but got a good arm. Let's take a shot. What is this going to take to sign him? And Eddie says, I can get him for $2,000. So when Eddie came to the bar, to my house, he says, we're going to sign you. And, you know, my dad was all excited. And I said, great. I didn't even ask him. He said, we're going to give you $2,000. I went, oh, great. So I got $2,000. By the time they took taxes out, I don't know what I cleared. But
what was the school you went to?
McClatchy High School, Sacramento.
And junior college?
Sacramento Junior College.
Sacramento?
Yep.
And you were there for 2 years?
Yep.
And you got signed?
Yep.
I'm still amazed because I'd never heard this story. That you never switch hit until you were in
Triple A.
First year
Triple
with the Phillies, so I mean, then you went back.
Right. Eugene, Oregon. Of course, I went to, after that year, I went to Instructional League, which people don't even do that anymore. But it was an honor for us to go to the Instructional League, because if you got asked to go to the Instructional League, you were considered a prospect. So when they told me, hey, after you play AAA, you got to go down to the Instructional League. And at that time, Instructional League was like 5 or 6 weeks. It wasn't 3 weeks. So I went down there and learned how to switch hit. Struggled my first year in a big league switch hit. And ended up hitting 250, though. I mean, so I probably should have said I end up running 250 because I could run.
A few leg hits in there?
Yeah, oh, a lot of leg hits, bunts, slaps, everything.
So we were talking about how the game has changed on the field, the rules, and so forth. What about the whole financial structure?
Well, obviously, I'm all for guys making money. There's no question about that. But you got guys, utility players making $2 or $3 million a year. That's a pretty good way to make a living.
It is.
So, but hey, if the owners didn't have it, they wouldn't give it to them. That part doesn't bother me at all. I'm glad for these guys, you know, that they can make that kind of money and take care of their families the rest of their life. It'd have been nice to do that when we played, but everything being what it is, at that time, we thought it was a lot of money what we made. So, and I'm sure guys before us went, God, are you seeing that kind of money? You know, it's always like that.
There are some guys who played in your era and before and after who are very resentful. I grew up a Ted Williams fan, and Ted was a guy who never seemed to, look back or say he embraced the new young players.
Yeah, I like the young players. I think they got a lot of ability. A lot of them have good work ethic. Some of them don't, but. No, I think it's great that they can make this kind of money. Like I said, if the owners didn't have it, they wouldn't be giving it out. So, more power to
them. No charity there.
No, more power to them. And with the TV contracts, the way they are, that's great.
Is there some question that no one has ever asked you that you think they should have or that I should have? Or something that's just never come up that you think is important to you or the game?
No, the only thing that I would like to, if I had to get something out there is, it doesn't matter in baseball, your size, your weight. If you got a big heart and you're willing to work, and you're willing to put in an hour, I don't mean an hour a day, I mean a lot of hours, 6-7 hours a day, and you want it bad enough, you can go out and get it. But again, a lot of guys say, yeah, I want it, but do they really want it? Do they want to sacrifice in the summertime when I was playing Legion ball and stuff like that, not going on vacations, just playing baseball summer, going to William Land Park, which is in Sacramento, and getting there at 9 in the morning and staying until 4 at night, 4 in the afternoon. Had to get there because we had a bunch of guys that played, that they had about 8 diamonds. If you didn't get there in the morning and didn't get a diamond, you didn't play. I remember my mom packing a lunch in the summertime, dropping me off and picking me up. But that to me is sacrificing, but I wanted to do it, so.
That's what it takes?
Yep. Perseverance, yeah. Stick-to-itiveness, yep.
Anything else you want to add?
No, this game's been great to me, and I respect the heck out of it now. I respected it when I came up. I get a little annoyed at some of the antics guys do now, but, again, it's a different game now. It's more of it's an entertainment business. So I've learned to deal with that when the bat flipping. Hey, you know what? That's what it is. So.
Well, if you couldn't deal with that,
I wouldn't be here. Right. So I what I do is I think back saying, I wonder if somebody did that to Carlton or Gibson, what would happen the next time up? And I don't think those guys would want to know what would happen. So.
Well, I think that's another thing, too. I don't, these younger players, for the most part, don't have as much sense of the history of the game.
They don't. You don't have my, the thing that I'll tell you one thing I wish I could implement. If I could be commissioner for a day, they have these seminars for these up-and-coming kids in the wintertime that are going to be in the big leagues. They meet in North Carolina, and they have these speakers telling you, this is what you have to do, da-da-da-da-da. I would change that format and put it in Cooperstown and make those guys go through Cooperstown. Whether you're with the Phillies, not only go through your organization, go through all the history of the game and learn about Marvin Miller, learn about Curt Flood, learn about the strikes that guys went on, the reason you're making all this money. I think that would be important to let those young kids that are coming up. That's how you get a history, you know what the history of baseball is all about, and almost make them go through the different ball clubs that are in Cooperstown.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
It really is. Well, listen, thank you.